This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And today we have more updates as more things are happening in Congress. Today, Congress formulates one specific charge against Donald Trump, the president, Donald Trump, for basically incitement of insurrection. This would be, if things go the way they plan, this would be the second time that the president of the United States, Donald Trump, would be impeached. And there's still more to come because there are other considerations being given to the full extent of his participation and of his responsibility in that hellish experience that we are attempting as a nation to come through. I don't know where this is going. We know that the term of President Trump ends officially on the 20th. We know that President-elect Biden will then become officially President Biden as he is inaugurated on that day. But the transfer of power, there are many questions that are not yet answered. We still don't know all that we need to know, but we cannot avoid the clock. The clock is going, and to a certain extent, we have to go along with it as a nation. This is the timetable that is set by law, and so the nation has to respect that timetable and fulfill its responsibilities according to that timetable. But there are many, many questions that have to be answered, many issues that have to be dealt with, and we'll see how it all unfolds. We are, by the way, some people are under the impression that it's been figured out. It's not been figured out. They're merely just getting to the first leg of it all. The first leg of this race is just now being sorted out. What is supposed to happen? Who is supposed to do it? Who is responsible? How is it going to be choreographed? What is the role of Congress in all of this? It has never happened before in the United States. So there's a lot of figuring out to do and to make it look as if, of course, we are prepared for any eventuality. And this is where we are right now. We are prepared to undertake a cleansing ritual. We've just been through a very harrowing experience as a nation. We have to cleanse ourselves and our system and then get back to something approximating normality. So we'll do that while we make it appear that we know exactly what we're doing. We have no clue. So that's the first thing. Everybody is trying to find his or her own way. Congress is trying to find its way. For that matter, Joe Biden, the president-elect at the moment, is trying to find his way. Donald Trump is trying to find his way through a barrage of actions that will come against him. And we, the people, we're trying to figure out how is this all going to be solved? And what is going to happen to us as a nation? And so I wanted to bring that closer to our attention, that very idea. Because Americans like to believe that our country holds aloft for the rest of the world to see its bright, shining beacon of freedom, equality, and justice for all. We know that at best, these are what we hope for and aspire to achieve. But the events of the past week remind us we have very far to go as we battle our way through a conundrum, a quintessentially American conundrum of race, class, and power. It was there as of day one, and even before day one, race, class, and power. And all, it seems, all of our national dealings have come down to this particular conundrum or formula or practice of how we live and how we are governed as a country. Somehow it involves these three things: race, class, and power. From time to time, there is a massive eruption, and from time to time, there are smaller eruptions occurring all over the country. So it is a bit disingenuous to say or to posit now that this recent tragedy, national tragedy, is so unique. We deal with this all the time. We've learned how to contain it, how to disguise it. But essentially, this is the way we have navigated a system. We've invented a system. And we have lived with the system that places us at some point in juxtaposition to one of these three things: race, class, and power. And we have managed to convince ourselves that we know what we're doing. We have a handle on this thing. We know exactly what we're doing, and that's why we are a powerful nation. That's why we have a very prosperous nation, and that's why we are always, in one way or the other, seeking to better ourselves. But the fact is, just under the surface of all of that drama that they tell us is going on in the name of American democracy and American power in the world and the American dream and all these other phrases that we hear conjured up all the time, especially when the country's in trouble, the fact is, this is what we come down to. We deal with these things. Our lives are affected and run and controlled forces. Whether we publicly acclaim it or not, this is how we have lived as a so-called nation. And everyone, in one way or the other, is acclimated to it. This is what we know. This is what we've been taught. This is what we've been shown as the American way. So we continue with the formula. The great conundrum of race, class, and power. So I want us to take a look at that directly as a result of the national upheaval that we have just been through. And now the process of trying to reach a point of equilibrium. It won't be equilibrium, but it will be equilibrium as far as we know it, as far as we understand that we are dealing with this conundrum yet again, race, class, and race, class, and power. And we haven't figured it out, but we will pretend that we have some kinds of answers coming out of that mix, race, class, and power. How do we allocate, you know, the portions of power and to whom? Who gets to be powerful in this country? Who gets to exercise power? That is, when you look at it, that is at the root of what we're dealing with, isn't it? We had a group deciding that by several different definitions, they qualify to rule, to call the shots, to force the country to recognize their power. And as we saw, these were white people for the most part. These were people of different classes, maybe, but for purposes of organizing and for stressing their point, and for carrying out their mission, they were one. It was clear who they considered the enemy. It was clear why they mobilized. But the structure of government can't deal with that. It has to set it aside and pretend it doesn't exist, that something else is what it now must deal with in Congress. All right. So I want us to get into that discussion today. This conundrum of race, class, and power, how do we deal with this? Is it the same? Has it changed? Will it be better? Will things be better after Congress takes action? Is there going to be some effort to tinker with the formula? And if so, what would that tinkering involve? Will it still remain that we should understand as a nation, all of us, that this is how our nation was formed? These are the foundational concepts that must prevail, and they will prevail. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's get your thoughts about that. Even as Congress now goes about the task of finding out whether and how to discipline an errant and out of control president who they're saying is the person who agitated this whole mess, caused it to happen, caused an uprising, caused an insurrection. But you would notice they're not saying that the president changed the formula. There's no threat of that. He misbehaved and incited people to take action that they really shouldn't have. Bad, bad, bad. But now we still are stuck with the question. What is it that happened? And even if we, quote, go forward, unquote, as a nation, does that mean there's going to be a new formula for how we are operating as a nation? Will there be a new understanding about how we relate to this concept of citizenship, of our rights as citizens? Is there going to be a new formula? Is it going to be the same old formula? What do you think? 888-874-4888. Mike from Maryland, you start us off today.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
I called you maybe about a month ago, and you were having a show, and you were talking about the vice president, Biden's vice president, and I tried to give you some insight regarding what was coming to pass and how it was linked to the Civil War and how it was linked to Reconstruction, and you kind of like dismissed me in saying that, oh, you're going way back. But the reason why this happened this time is because the very same thing happened after the Civil War. You had legislatures all over the South that were taken over by black men. They formed the Republican Party. It was when Lincoln was killed and Johnson, Lincoln's vice president, who was a Southerner, who failed to execute Lincoln's plan and remove the troops from the South, and all of the former Confederate generals and leaders were readmitted to Congress, and they began to actually do the same thing. They terrorized state capitals and city capitals all throughout the South and physically removed the elected officials, the black elected officials. It's history repeating itself, except it's playing out in an economic context instead of a racial context. So.
Okay. Now bring us up to the point that we are, from your analysis and understanding, what are we to come away with here? Apart from the fact that you would say, well, it's history repeating itself. Is it as simple as that?
Well, no, it's not as simple as that. It actually is I hate to use this phrase, but it's a new world order being formed. They're instituting a whole new system, just the way that the end of the Civil War ushered out the agrarian system and into the industrial one. We're leaving the tech age, and we're entering the age of AI, in a data-driven age, and the elimination of money and all that kind of stuff. So if you look at what's going on, they eliminated the jobs. Those jobs aren't coming back. What will people do? They will be paid to sit home. They'll be paid. Isn't that what's been happening?
You think so?
You tell me, isn't that what's been happening? Haven't they been issuing checks for the last year?
I'm taking it in the sense of we're in a crisis as a nation. And there isn't a handbook on how we get out of this. But I think you're right on the point of, as a nation, when we study how the nation was formed, what forces what forces were brought to bear to create a nation and out of what, and who this nation was to be for, who were to be the principal beneficiaries of these efforts and of reform. This is really where we are.
Well, this is a capitalist nation, right? If it's a capitalist nation, then the capitalists who run the nation, because it's a capitalist nation, capital should be at the forefront of the discussion, because nothing happens without capital, right? Who owns Donald Trump? Capital. Which, that's why he didn't release his tax returns. He's in debt up to his eyeballs. Capital. And we know who prints capital. But I'm not going to say it on these airwaves.
So, do you agree or not about this triangulation of race, class, and power?
Among those people who, we only deal in that. The masses deal in that separation. But the people with the capital, we're all the same. Those people who don't work, those people who live off the labor of everybody else, we're all the same. I don't care if you're a millionaire, a billionaire, whatever. If you don't have what you say you have on paper, if it's just paper and you don't possess it, then you're owned.
So is it possible that there will be any meaningful change in the near future, even as Congress now says?
Oh, yeah, there's going to be change. There's going to be a lot of change. I've been saying this for a long time, and nobody listens, but we've seen it play out. It's just a slow burn.
I wouldn't say nobody listens. You think nobody is listening, but maybe some people are.
Nobody's listening because everybody's consumed with consumption. Everybody wants to consume. But you're going to be forced to learn how not to consume. It's a slow burn.
Well, we've gotten the key point that you're making. And let's see how people are reacting to it. But thank you very much. It's a very considered opinion, and I thank you for offering it.
Thank you.
Hi. Ed from Jamaica, you're on the air. What is this triangulation? Is it still existing, or has America really solved that and moved on, and then we get a hiccup here?
Yes. Good afternoon, Teresa. How are you?
Okay, Ed.
Race, class, and power. A couple of things. Americans have to grow up politically and disabuse themselves of the idea of American exceptionalism. The reason why this country is here is because a small group of people who colonized this country stole it from the people who were already here on this land and then didn't want to pay tribute to the people that they came from. And that is the basic foundation of America. Taxation without representation, we're going to resist. It became violent when the people wanted to unite and throw out the English government in the beginning, because there were several revolutions, quote unquote, where Britain wasn't getting paid any taxes. You got to remember, a transatlantic trip took well over a year. That's in good seas. So the crown really had no influence over here, and it was only the representatives of the crown that enforced British law. And there were several peaceful resolutions where the people here worked among themselves. It's just when commerce became involved is when violence became involved, and the growth of capitalism from Adam Smith to John Quincy Adams and all of these, the invisible hand, all of these things go to form the republic, which is just a republic and not a true democracy, number one. Number two, race and class are interchangeable. Race in America didn't become a concept until the 1690s, when the first slave ships came over here. But there were indentured servants. You were known by what country you came from, whether you're Ethiopian, Italian, German. The idea of race is a construct of the American experience. And in that race creates a class, a lower class, similar to the caste system in India. So we have to disabuse ourselves of these legends of American exceptionalism, American greatness, American individuality, and come to the real fact that this is a capitalist system. And for a capitalist system to work properly, somebody's got to be on top and somebody's got to be on the bottom. And in America, it was easy to make African Americans that because of color differentiated us from everyone else. Because everyone else that has come into this country during the course of their development has quote unquote became American white. From the Chinese to the Italians to the Germans to the Jewish, they've all quote unquote got to experience that American exceptionalism, and primarily off of the backs of African Americans. That's just true. You can look for history in that. The only way we're going to move forward and get any real change over the lip service is to realize that the system is broken and it does not work. And it will not work the way it is. Even now, as we speak, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, just to name a few, 10 people or 10 or 30 people in this world are making money off of a tragedy that's afflicting the whole planet. And that's not just. That's not right. That's not democratic. So we got to disabuse ourselves of these legends, that these myths that we cling to as far as America is concerned. And until we can do that and really take apart this system and build something that gives consideration to mankind, that gives consideration to brotherhood, fraternity, fidelity, and liberty for all, we're always going to be this way. And these are not just cliches. These are things we really have to take a look at.
So, is there hope? Was there supposed to be are we supposed to see a positive message from the actions of the insurrectionists, that really they were not just violent, but they may have been clumsy in how they translated their actions so that people could understand what was behind them? I don't think they even understood. But what has to happen before people start getting that message, the message you're talking about today?
Well, I wouldn't call what happened in the past week an insurrection per se, because those were just angry people, and their icon, their leader, their quote, their want for another better word, God, was being torn down. The emperor had no clothes, and they were upset. And we still got to look into the fact of how that was able to happen in this nation's capital, when I personally know that there are plans in Washington, D.C., with the Capitol Police, with the Secret Service, to lock down Washington in the event of violent or even nonviolent protests. I think what we have to look forward to is what happened initially in last year, George Floyd protests, the Black Lives Matter protests, all of those things that were going on. That was a unified effort, and there were several colors of the rainbow involved in that. And that's where the future lies. I always say localized movements, localized change, and unity on that. That's where the future lies. This national government, these national leaders, they're in a bubble. They don't realize what's going on. They're not in touch with the common people. But that movement, when you saw people of all ethnicities coming together and resisting and forming unity, that's where our future lies, not in Washington. Washington's a dinosaur.
In where we are now, we have Congress. We have a new president who is supposed to take his place in the order of things. How does this – what message is Joe Biden supposed to get from what it is you're saying in order to change the formula? And in order to move away from a system that is corrosive, it does not work. It creates trouble. It creates all kinds of friction.
Joe Biden is not capable of listening to what I'm saying. To be totally honest with you, my personal opinion, because I'm not inside this. None of these people are capable of listening to what I'm saying, because what I am saying involves uncomfortable change. What I am saying involves uncomfortable growth. Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, all of these other, the Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, even Ocasio and the squad, they're all there to maintain certain levels of status quo. They're all there to maintain this government. They have a vested interest in this government existing. I don't. I'm not afraid of the change. I'm not afraid of the uncomfortability. You grow. A seed has to die before it can sprout. And you got to be ready to say, hey, listen, we got to tear everything down. We got to start from scratch. We got to get rid of these ideas of race, class. It's going to be a long process, and it's going to be a lot of uncomfortability. But you got to be ready for it, and these people ain't ready for it. They're happy the way things are. And as long as that majority stays in power, they're going to institute the fear, the loathing, the separation, the degradation, the confusion that keeps them in power. We got to grow up. Or there might not be, with global warming, there might not even be a planet. This is not, there have been 5 mass extinctions in the history of this planet. Human beings ain't nothing. We've only been here a drop of an eye. And we can wipe ourselves out very easily without even knowing it. So, got to grow up or make room for something else.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for your contribution today. We'll take a break and come back to the question once more about how do we, first of all, do we understand the situation as being one in which we are constantly buffeted by the forces of race, class, and power? That is not going to go away. It is not going to be fixed by any edict of Congress today. That's not going to happen. But that we ourselves have to be aware that this is what is happening in this country. But how do we fix it, if it is fixable at all? How do we deal with this? We take a break, come back to your analysis right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.fm. And that, I thought, was apropos, talking about the darkness in which we are enveloped as a nation, pretending that we are on the move. We're solving issues. We are finding answers. But in fact, we are in the midst of darkness. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Try to get right to the point of your question and not yammer, and get right to the point in a laser way. When we look at the situation that we're in, we're looking at a country that was created by the elite who wanted to break away from the English monarchy and take over. It was not created by the people. It was created by the elite who wanted to make certain that they could maintain slavery and create a slave state. And they didn't have any idea of democracy in mind for the people who live here. So we are still dealing with an elite who runs the country to this day. We may have signs of so-called democracy, like voting and whatnot. We have a quasi-democracy, but the elite runs the country. And no elite that I know of will willingly just give up what they have. So they know how to play people to get what they want. Now, let's deal with the rebellion that we had in Washington and whatnot. The concept of race is something that they didn't use after their breaking away, and it's went into full force after Bacon's Rebellion. And that was a way to get people from Europe to join the elite in terms of so-called race and phenotype, exactly. Actually, that was a caste system with the elite at the top and the masses of so-called white people who are people who came from Europe, and when they got here, they became white. And then you have another caste of the slaves and people like that, and the so-called Indians. And so we have a caste system that is in effect right to today with the elite at top and a setup that is supposed to be democracy. And as we know already by Edward Bernay, Freud's relative who helped create this science of propaganda, you just tell the lie long enough and people start believing it. So we don't really have democracy. If you look in the dictionaries, you'll see all kind of suggestions of what democracy means, voting or whatever. But a government that is in service of the people, we do not have. We have a government that is in the service of the elite. And what's happening is the elite is running this capitalist system, and their one goal is to make money, to enrich themselves. And they're getting better and better at it. And the masses of people, and especially white people, so-called, are losing ground. They're seeing women get ahead. They're seeing black people get ahead, step up. And every step up, that's the people who are at the bottom of the caste system, like African Americans, they feel they're taking a step down. So that's what you see when you see those crowds of folks who used to have good jobs until the ruling class, the elite that is, the corporations, sent their jobs to Mexico or Bangladesh or somewhere else, China, and they lost their $25, $30 an hour jobs and making automobiles to workers in Mexico or somewhere else. And so the manufacturing sector that was reserved for those in that category has decreased precipitously, and they feel they're losing ground. That's the reason that you have the suicide rate and the death rate of so-called white males going down in this country, and that's happening because of their desperation, suicide, drug abuse, alcoholism. All those things are befalling those people in that top caste. And I'm saying these people I'm talking about are on the bottom of the caste. In other words, they join that caste by so-called race, but they're not running it. Their leader's running it. So that's what we have here. And it's a very tragic situation because nowhere have I seen the elite just giving up. They are playing people very well, and that's the people that you saw at the Capitol doing what they did. And they feel that they're losing, and that's what we have. So caste is important here, and for a matter of fact, it would be good for many of our seminar members to read this book by Elizabeth Wilkerson, Caste. So this is a very good thing. So caste does not only depend upon so-called race, but caste is the situation that we have that is really very effective in controlling people. And the only way elite can control the number of people that we have here is to break them up, divide and conquer, and that is their signature move to control what they're doing, and they're not going to just give up and turn over and do the right justice, peace and justice for everyone, democracy for everyone. This is quasi-democracy. You may vote, but they're still in charge. That's the way I see it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, David, for contributing today. Gwen from New York, what have you to say?
Hi, Beatrice. Hi. I have to say, first, I haven't been here since the beginning of the coup, but you know, I remember speaking about the coup, and I remember people calling and saying, oh, that's not really going to happen. This is just politics as usual. And they're just, you know, thumping their chest. Well, I don't think they're thumping their chest. I think they're as serious as a heart attack. I think I almost had one watching what's going on. I'm not taking this in stride. I don't feel comfortable in the slightest bit watching this. There's going to be an armed insurrection on the 17th and the 18th and the 19th and the 20th. People already camped out in front of the White House getting ready for it. And we still don't have a plan of action. We still don't have, we don't even have any punishment for what just happened. We're actually having ridiculous philosophical conversations about whether or not it's okay to kick out the president of the United States who tried to overturn the United States and still is trying. And he's feeling very confident today because now he's out there talking about his new What I Did For You campaign. That's the next one. But I think the thing that's coming up on Thursday is very, very terrifying, given that we didn't have any kind of, well, we did have a plan of action. I do believe this was an inside job. When you want to talk about race and how it was connected to this, I thought it was very interesting watching who was inside of the Capitol, what police were inside and what police were outside. There were throngs of police outside, but every time you saw the police that were inside, they were black and they were getting surrounded by mobs. And there was just like two of them. And there were some white ones there too. And it turns out that the white cop who got conked on the top of the head and killed happened to be an anti-war protester. He had gone to the Iraq war. He had served, and then when he came back, he decided that he was against the war, and he became an activist against the Iraq and the Afghan war. And so it looked very much like to me this was an inside job, like kind of what they did with Serpico. And so it looked like the people that were inside of the Capitol trying to defend it were people that were put there on purpose. Because anybody who was a black cop was not going to be part of this thing. And it looks very much to me like this was done very meticulously from the inside. And this is what gave the president the enormous amount of confidence he has had leading up to this. He keeps telling us, I might be your president after this. I might be your president. And everybody keeps poo-pooing him. And even the day of the insurrection, when I looked at it at 11 o'clock in the morning, I called my friend and I said, it looks like nothing's going to happen because I said, I don't see a huge crowd out there. It's 11 o'clock and Trump is supposed to go on. But what happened after Trump came on is throngs of people kept coming in and coming in and coming in, and they came in all day. And what a friend of mine tells me who saw it from the ground, he had a friend that was there on the ground, was that these people just kept coming in all day. And it was just many, many more people than what they showed you on TV. Now, interestingly, I told you about the cavalcade, the Trump cavalcade that my parents and I got caught in down here in Cape May, and how frightening it was because the police were escorting them, and they were also on the side of the road, allowing them to travel on the side of oncoming traffic, and they did not stop them. And two of the protesters that were interviewed on TV were right from this little town here. One of them was from Cape May. One of them was from Lower Township, which is right next door. Now, all through the summer, we've had nonstop trucks coming through Cape May with these gigantic flags for Trump, huge signs all over the place. And the reason why I bring it up is this is a really small town. This is not a big town. But there was no place for anybody to go. When one man was hit over the head with a tire iron in the Acme because he was wearing a Biden. The police advised him not to take it to the news and not to talk about it any further because it was for his better health that he does not do that. Now, there's no place for people to go down here because we don't have a police department that is any longer defending regular people. If you're not a Trump supporter, then they're not going to help you if you're in a crisis. And we're also using government vehicles and property to promote this, to me, an illegitimate president. So what I want to say is that I spoke about a coup d'etat before it happened, and it did happen. And I don't want the whole United States to go down in flames. I really don't. I think that one thing people have to put in perspective is that this is just an experiment, and you need to at least hope that it works. Because even though the words sometimes are just the words, at least they are being put out there. It's up to us to make those words happen. And if we don't put forth any effort, or we give up, or we are constantly negative and constantly cynical, then we are going to just get what we get. And that is, we get to sit on the sidelines and talk about it until we're blue in the face. But watch out, because there's doers out there. And what you saw the other day are the people that are also frustrated. But they're motivated by a whole different apparatus. They're completely motivated by racism and hatred. And that was the centerpiece. That's why nobody could tell you the other day what they were really fighting for. They didn't have a platform. Some people had the nerve to wear what on their clothing, what their motto really was. I mean, some of the T-shirts said 6 million was not enough. Some of them had Auschwitz boot camp. But most of them didn't have the guts to tell you what they were really there for. You know, they want the extermination of black people in the United States. That's what will happen. That's, if we keep letting it go, that's what's going to happen here. And I don't want to see that happen. And I also don't want to see us burn up, and I don't want to let these animals get any further than they have. I hope the hell this idiotic, ridiculous government, these idiots that are in office today, they're still questioning whether or not this was a resurrection, a rise up of that was illegal. They're still questioning that. We're still arguing over that. This to me immediately should have been put down the day it happened. And the president should have been arrested that day and taken out of office. He is not fit. And we don't need any more analysis or conversation about it. He is not fit. And if we don't get rid of him, and it doesn't look like we are, we're going to have to live with him for years after this. Because what this did, there is blood in the water right now. The sharks are circling. And now they can see by our inaction, by the government's inaction and unwillingness because of their own personal agendas to do anything. Now there is weakness. And, you know, this is very much like what happened with Hitler. And my father was there. My father is still alive. He fought in World War II. My father almost had tears in his eyes the other day when he spoke to my brother because he was trying to explain to him what happened in France when they showed the peaceful face in France when the Nazis marched through. And the march happened because there were not enough soldiers left in France to even fight in World War II. So they had to give up their country to allow the Nazis to go through. And you know what my brother said to my father? He said, "Dad, you and I just don't agree on this kind of thing, so let's not talk about it." I mean, it's hard for my father to realize that, you know, essentially part of our family goes right along with the Nazi, the whole thing. And there's lots of nice people out there. You think they're nice. And this is deep in their heart and in their gut. And their racism is to the point where I think that they would not have a problem at all with exterminating people. And I think we have to get in front of it. And we have to get it in front of it with fierceness, force, whatever it takes to stop it, it has to happen. Because I'm telling you, you don't, no matter what you say, people in this audience, that you don't mind fighting in a civil war, and you don't mind going to the mat. Let me tell you something, you're going to mind it. If you haven't seen a war, then you don't know what the hell you're talking about. You're going to mind it a great deal because you're going to end up with zero, not a nothing, and most likely losing your life. Because let me tell you something, everybody who's on the left is an activist, has an X on their back, and they're the first ones to go down. And it's not going to be a nice way of going down. It's going to be a way of being tortured, have your fingernails pulled out, being hanged. All kinds of things are going to happen. So we need to get in front of this, and we need to stop being so damn cynical. That is my input for the show, so I just wanted to share that with you.
Thank you. Very gracious ending. Thank you very much, Gwen. Bill, you're up next, but please be mindful that time is short.
Yes, hello.
Hello, Bill.
Yes, hi. I had a number of points, but the main thing now is regarding the Capitol Police. As someone who literally grew up on Capitol Hill, working in Ted Kennedy's office from time I was 14 to 18, every job at the United States Capitol is done by the system of patronage and seniority, including the Capitol Hill Police. Most of those police officers were directly appointed to those jobs through that system and are beholden to the various congressmen and senators that have appointed them. So if you want to know why they just sort of said, come on in or let me escort you out, that's one reason why, that because they are basically appointed by the Congress. That's all I have to say today.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Well, we got quite a bit of education today, and that's because I don't want to pat myself on the back, but it's important to keep these issues in play. If we don't watch out, if we go with the flow, we will be following a planned effort to distract us from looking at things that we ought to be looking at and talking about things that we ought to be talking about. I'm sorry. We have to continue staying on a subject that we know it's important. Look at what we've heard today. Which medium have you heard these things from? And they're regular, ordinary people. Nobody, this was not prearranged. This was not organized. It was people calling in and sharing their views. This is why PRN is so important. We are being educated by people who are among us and who have great information to share with us that would help us, you know, see things a little bit more clearly, come to entirely different conclusions. This is education, and we are being self-educated here. I think that's the greatest value of PRN. I want to thank you so much for contributing today. We'll try to keep the conversation going as we keep tabs on what's happening in Washington, the so-called answers or solutions that they are putting on the table, which are not. I mean, it's important. We have to address the situation that has occurred. It was a very disruptive and very shocking development in our collective experience. But at the same time, we must note that the really important things that we need to keep in mind are not being discussed and won't be discussed because they are diametrically opposed. They are totally different from what is being sold. We are being sold one package, and the hope is that we can tie into that and make life a lot easier, because that's what propaganda does. It is designed to force a kind of unanimity of thought, and by extension, unanimity of action. So let us continue talking to each other and finding new information from among ourselves. Thank you all for calling, and let's meet up again tomorrow to talk some more. Bye-bye.